Welcome to today's program. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode, and later you will have the opportunity to ask questions during our question and answer session. At that time, you may register to ask a question by pressing the star and one on your touch-tone phone, and the pound key will remove you from the queue. Please note this call may be recorded, and I will be standing by if you need any assistance. It is now my pleasure to turn your conference over to Ms. Sarah Dubois. Please go ahead, ma'am.
Thank you. As the operator mentioned, I'm Sarah Dubois. I'm the Communications Director at the National Security Network. Thank you all for joining today on short notice to talk about the violence in Libya. This is obviously a sad day. I won't take too much of your time. I know that we're starting a little bit late, but just really briefly, I wanted to mention who we're going to be hearing from today. First, we'll hear from Ambassador Wendy Chamberlain, who is the president of the Middle East Institute and was previously the U.S. ambassador to Pakistan, including serving there on 9/11. She will then hand it over to Major General Paul Eaton. In addition to being the senior advisor to the National Security Network, he is a 30-year U.S. Army veteran and served in U.S. conflict and post-conflict operations in Somalia, Bosnia, and Iraq. We'll also hear from Tom Malinowski, who is the Washington Director of Human Rights Watch and spent time in Benghazi last year during the revolution. And finally, we'll hear from Brian Katulis, who is a senior fellow at the Center for American Progress and a Middle East expert. He is also a leading expert on the relationship between U.S. politics and American policy in the Middle East. And with that, Ambassador Chamberlain.
Well, thank you very much. Is indeed a very sad day. We've lost colleagues in the Middle East. The ambassador was one of the rising stars, and I'm personally aggrieved. I was asked to speak on what an embassy does when faced with imminent attack or in a situation like this. And basically, every embassy abroad relies on the security of the host government. We can't and don't provide security defense for our embassies. Every embassy will have, or most embassies will have, a team of U.S. Marines, but it's never expected that the Marines are full defense in the case of attack, as we saw in Benghazi. We rely on the host government. They're notified immediately if it looks like the embassy may come under attack. But personnel within the embassy will retreat to a safe haven. Basically, the embassy goes into lockdown. We have established safe havens with secure doors and supplies and commo inside. We have safe havens in embassy residences as well. In extreme situations when danger is very threatening, the Marines are authorized, do have weapons, and are authorized to use them, but that's an extremist. So imagine an embassy is having layers of security, the first layer being host government security services.
General Eaton.
Hi. Thank you very much, Ambassador. Thank you for your remarks. 3 points. First, I have soldiered next to our diplomats in a number of countries and have been impressed with their courage under fire and their willingness to accept risk. And frequently, they are at greater risk than soldiers because they have a military envelope around them all the time. Second, I trust our FBI and other agencies will assist the Libyan government to get to the bottom of exactly what happened and to move for accountability and to punish the guilty. And three, soldiers look to their chain of command, look to their leadership to be cool, calm, and collected, steady in the saddle, to be judicious in what they say and how they act. And I deeply regret some of the intemperate remarks that we've heard, particularly from very senior Republican leadership who have not been steady in the saddle. They have been given to panic and hyperbole. So this is a time to close ranks with American leadership and to get to the bottom of what happened and to ensure that we prevent recurrence. Thank you. Over to you, Mr. Malinowski. Thank you.
Thank you, General, and everyone who's joined. I was asked to do a little bit just on Libya and where it is right now, and provide a little bit of background to what happened. In brief, in many respects, Libya has been making a good deal of progress over the last several months. They had an election that most observers thought would go badly because things are so chaotic in Libya in general, but actually went extremely well. We had hoped that that election would help to give the new government in Libya greater legitimacy and authority to begin to consolidate the rule of law in the country. And some positive steps in that direction have been taken. The Achilles heel of this revolution in Libya has always been the power, the continuing power of armed militia groups, many of which took part in the fighting during the conflict last year, who have refused to give up their arms and have operated with impunity and essentially have the entitled attitude that they can do whatever they want because they have guns. Some of these groups are Salafi, one form or another of religious extremists. Others are not. The Salafi groups in particular in the last several weeks have been launching increasingly brazen attacks, some against aid workers and agencies in the country, a number of attacks against Sufi shrines, shrines of the Sufi sect, which they consider to be apostate. And the government, frankly, has not taken strong action against them. In fact, after one of the Sufi shrines was destroyed, the interior minister of Libya said that he didn't think it was worth risking the life of a single one of his police officers to protect a mere shrine. And many of us in the U.S. government warned them that if they allowed this to get out of hand, there would be a terrible price to pay. And yesterday we saw one measure of that price. It is important to stress, though, that this is these are relatively small groups in terms of their support among the Libyan people. I spent enough time in Libya in the last couple of years to be confident that the vast, vast majority of Libyans are disgusted and ashamed about what has happened. They aren't responsible for what happened yesterday. That said, they are responsible for making sure that it doesn't happen again. They are responsible for getting to these people, these groups that have been committing these acts, confronting them once and for all, which is not going to be easy, but is absolutely necessary to save their revolution and their ability to have a relationship with the United States. So I think, you know, it's absolutely important that we not give up on Libya, and the administration, I think, was pitch perfect today in stressing that. But we also have to be extremely tough on the Libyan authorities in insisting that they meet their responsibility and confront these lawless armed groups. Thanks. I'll pass it on to Brian.
Thanks, Tom. I was asked to talk about sort of the broader Middle East policy implications, and I'd just make two brief points and then open it up to questions. First, obviously, this tragic murder of our diplomatic personnel highlights the fact that there are threats that are still out there, threats that exist, that despite a relatively well-managed transition in Libya so far from Muammar Gaddafi, that there are fringe groups with ideologies that may be similar to Al-Qaeda Central and some of these threats that are out there that are willing and capable of attacking U.S. personnel. And as Wendy noted, you know, the keeping our diplomatic personnel safe is one of the key objectives here. But I think what we're likely to see in the next few days is a very aggressive approach to try to deal with these fringe groups. As the president said in his statement today in the Rose Garden, he said, make no mistake about it, we're going to work with the Libyan government to bring to justice the killers who attacked our people. And I think that's been a overall feature the Obama administration's policy in the Middle East, vigilance on terrorist threats, whether it be in Pakistan or in Yemen and now in Libya. And I would expect some form of a response underway now. The second thing I'd say, and in line with what Tom just said, that staying engaged as a leader in Libya and then more broadly in countries in transition like Egypt and Tunisia and Yemen, I think will be essential. One reaction one might expect here politically is an attitude of just pulling out and saying, well, why are we spending so much time and money in places like this? And I think that would be the exact wrong instinct. We've heard from some senators today talking about holding back aid to Libya. Again, I think it's the wrong instinct. Ambassador Christopher Stevens risked his life to engage Libyan counterparts and to help them build a more positive future. And I think the best way to honor his memory and the memory of his colleagues lost in this attack is to stick with those efforts, as tough as they are in places like Libya and in Egypt and in Yemen, that we need to stay sort of sustained with the right sort of leadership and offering support in these transitions. So it's hard and it's difficult and it's going to be different in different countries in the Middle East. But I think our leadership is essential, and it's not just talking about our leadership. It's actually standing by the diplomats and others who are risking their lives day in and day out to do this work. I'll close there.
Thank you, Brian. Operator, will you invite our participants again to ask questions and give them the instructions?
Certainly. If you'd like to ask a question, please press the star 1 on your touchtone phone. You may withdraw your question at any time by pressing the pound key. And once again, if you would like to ask a question, please press the star and 1 on your touchtone phone now. We'll pause for a moment to allow questions to queue. Our first question will come from Joe Biddle with AFP. Your line is open.
Good afternoon, and thank you very much for organizing this conference on this day. I wondered if the panelists could talk to, and I think Brian just briefly touched on this, but could talk to the situation in Syria now in the light of these events, and whether this will, in fact, deter any further engagement on the part of the United States in the events that are unfolding there. Thank you.
Yeah, I'll take a lead on this. I mean, I think first, the obvious thing to say is that the U.S. government is focused on the situation right now in Libya and responding to it, and I don't think they're looking to draw major lessons or transfer sort of what we're seeing now unfold in Libya into anything we might do on Syria. I actually think that whatever one thinks about the Obama administration's approach to Syria, it's been deeply engaged in trying to assess what needs to be done to try to stop the violence, and it's tried different pathways and avenues towards that, and quite obviously those have not succeeded. But this approach of working with key allies like Turkey and dozens of other countries around the world to assess the situation, to look before we leap and do anything in Syria, I think has been pragmatic, and it's been the right path. And I think all of the blame for the violence goes to the Assad regime and those that are backing them. So I think in sum, some may say that this situation in Libya would lead to further hesitations or disengagement from the Syria issue, and I don't think that's what will happen. I don't think it's the right path. I think continuing to work with Turkey and others in developing responses to the refugee crisis and trying to craft some sort of peaceful solution will be job number one for the U.S. And whether Obama or Romney is elected, this is a very, very complicated situation in Syria, and we want to make sure that any step that we take, military, diplomatic, and otherwise, actually reduces the violence rather than increases it.
Let me just briefly add to that, this is Tom, that whatever the United States had done in Libya, whether we had intervened or not intervened, whether we're engaged in the Middle East or not, whether we do more in Syria or not, it would make absolutely no difference to the fact that there are small numbers of very radical armed Salafi groups who see a moronic video on YouTube and react by wanting to kill Americans. So whatever the actual reaction may be, it would not be a rational reaction to this problem to do more or less anywhere. It's not related to the extent to which we're involved in dealing with a crisis like Syria.
We'll take our next question from the line of Andrea Stone with Huffington Post. Your line is open.
Yes, thanks for having this call. Can you talk, any of you, I know that General Eaton touched on this, but in terms of the reaction from both the White House, the State Department, and from the campaign trail from Governor Romney, in terms of how you would assess how, you know, the various leaders have reacted to this. And secondly, kind of unrelated, but there's now information coming out that originally it was thought that some Israeli-American person had made this ridiculous video, and now there's some reports that it's actually not true, and that it might be actually maybe some evangelical Christians who are involved with this video. If anybody can take that too.
Well, this is Wendy Chamberlain. I think it's very early in the crisis and a great number of people are trying to sort out exactly who made the video, what happened, even what happened on the ground in both Egypt and in Benghazi. But what is true, if anybody has, if you have watched the YouTube splices of this film, it is reprehensible and disgusting. It's highly provocative emotionally to anybody of any religion, and it is certainly designed to do so. And I'd just like to echo Tom's remarks that the reaction was emotional from the small group of violent Salafists should not surprise anybody. Frankly, I'm not a Salafist, and I was appalled and emotionally troubled by the film myself. And I think that any decent person, and I know there are a lot of people out there that have said, well, we shouldn't apologize to this, but any decent person who sees this film would immediately want to apologize.
This is Brian Katulis. On the first part of your question, I think it's, you know, we've had a very focused morning on this issue, and it's not only a policy question, but it's quite obviously a political question less than 2 months before the election. It's my view that President Obama, along with Secretary of State Clinton, set the right tone in their statements this morning and really focused on the complex situation, also focused on honoring the service of the diplomats we lost. Mitt Romney really, I think, didn't do himself much favor. He actually looked like he was auditioning to be a commentator on Fox News as opposed to running for president of the United States. And the sharp contrast in tone was striking to me, not only between Romney and Obama's statements, because you stand where you sit, but between Romney and Senator John McCain's statement on Libya, which I think was much more focused on the challenges that we face in Libya and policy substance and where do we go from here. And it, you know, goes back to this point where I think the fact that Mitt Romney has been criticized so much, even by his own colleagues in the Republican Party, for being too rhetorical on issues, and I think you look at his statement, there was a lot of rhetoric there, but not a lot of substance. I don't know how this plays with most Americans, but I don't think it engenders a lot of trust and credibility in Mitt Romney's ability to actually serve as a commander-in-chief who's focused on the issues. It looks like he's trying to politicize a situation which is quite complicated. It looks like he's criticizing U.S. diplomats while those diplomats are under fire or under siege in certain countries. And that, I think, is bad form.
Brian was very eloquent. Paul Eaton here. Unless you're in the execution-level detail, this is a great opportunity to stay quiet and allow the experts to pursue a reasonable conclusion. So this is a time to assist American leadership to close ranks with the president and to help not get in the way.
Thank you.
We will take our next question from the line of Deborah Saunders with the San Francisco Chronicle. Please go ahead.
Yes, I have two questions. One, there are a number of reports that these attacks were well planned and they were planned before this video came out. Any reaction to that, and also to speculation that that the Cairo actions in Benghazi were coordinated?
Hey, this is Brian. Just briefly, I think those reports, it's a little too soon to tell, and there's a lot of speculation. It wouldn't surprise me, though, because going back to the first point I made in my opening remarks, despite what I think has been a very positive change in most parts of the Middle East that have seen political transitions like Egypt, Tunisia, Libya, some of these fringe extremist groups are out there. And it wouldn't surprise me that they would try to use a date like September 11th, which is a very somber anniversary for us, to try to make some sort of point. But I think it's too soon to tell. I think the reporters and others and people in government are assessing this, because these are, again, small fringe groups in a decentralized effort. It's really too early to tell, but it wouldn't surprise me. But it goes back to a point I think we're all trying to make here, is that we, in response to all of this, need to keep our wits about us, to understand and keep in mind that these groups are quite outside of their own mainstream. You see the protests in Libya today of people condemning these extremists. You see the protests also praising the ambassador and the United States for its support. So it would not surprise me, but I think these reports are early. These sort of extremist groups would look to see some sort of opportunity here to make a statement. But it's a statement, I think, that demonstrates the hollowness of their and emptiness of their cause.
Yeah, I would just add that there is some evidence, although all this is premature, as Brian suggested, that the attack in Benghazi may have been planned by this group of people. There's less evidence of that in the Cairo attack, which seemed to be more of a spontaneous mob, and I haven't seen evidence of the two being linked, at least not yet. And then, you know, just back to the larger point that Brian made, and particularly with respect to Libya, I've always thought it was interesting that Libya is the only country in which, in the Middle East, in the post-Arab Spring Middle East, in which the United States directly intervened on the side of a civilian population trying to overthrow their dictator. And it's also the only post-Arab Spring country in the Middle East that, when they had a free and fair election, did not vote for the Islamist alternative. And in fact, the news from just about 5 minutes ago is that it looks like the candidate who may be winning the balloting for prime minister in Libya is Mahmoud Jibril, who is seen as the most pro-Western of the candidates, and who seemed to be doing less well just a few days ago. So it may well be that one political reaction to this outrage inside Libya is a decision to elevate someone who is seen by most Libyans as being closely linked to the West. So I think that does tell you something about where the majority of folks, at least in Libya, are, which is not to downplay at all the absolute urgency of dealing with the threat that they face and that we face there.
While we're on the topic, thank you, guys, but of reactions from the new governments, this is really a seminal moment for the new Egyptian, Mr. Morsi. He's going to be tested in how he handles this crisis and as to whether he will use it for political purposes or whether he'll step up and and calm the roiled waters in Egypt. And early indications are that he'll exercise leadership, but we will all need to watch this very closely.
We'll take our next question from the line of Julian Haddam with Yomiuri News. Your line is open.
Yeah, hi. Thank you guys so much for doing this. There's been some finger-pointing on behalf of the new Libyan government that seems to kind of blame some old Gaddafi regime holdouts for the violence. Can you speak to that at all? Do you think that's likely?
Well, I think I've already been quoted somewhere on this today. I think it's actually very unfortunate that that's what they're doing. They've had a tendency over the last several months to blame former Gaddafi elements, unnamed, for everything that goes wrong in the country. And it's convenient because that excuses them from looking at the mirror and recognizing that the biggest threat that they face, that their revolution faces, comes from amongst some of the fighters who fought alongside them during the revolution. So when I hear that suggests to me that perhaps they still don't get it. I do think that today's events are going to be the wake-up call that they need. I certainly hope so. And that although some of the talking points that are being recycled today are old ones, that they realize now that a line has been crossed and that their relationship with the United States and the outside world is very much at stake, the reputation of their country is at stake, and that the time has come to do what is certainly very difficult because it means confronting groups with lots of weapons, but something that is very, very necessary.
Thank you, Tom, and thank you all for joining us. Again, this is Sarah Dubois. Thank you for taking the time today. We will post the audio this afternoon at nsnetwork.org under Newsroom and send it out to you. If you have any questions about today's call or would like to follow up for more information or to speak with any of today's experts, please feel free to contact me. You can get me at 202-289-7113. And this is Sarah Dubois at National Security Network. Thank you and have a great afternoon.